Am I good to open up the show now, Russell? I wasn't sure.
Good.
All right, welcome to another edition of Proselytized or Apostatized. We're switching this over to a music channel, so no, we're not doing that. We're just I think Russell's having too much fun actually when he's not opening the show up. But speaking of Russell, what's up, Russell? How are things going on that end?
It's going good, buddy. We got a challenge coming up, and we're gonna have David Johnson on the show, I think, and we're gonna talk about divine hiddenness.
Ooh.
So start getting into a little bit of study into that. So.
Dude, I'm ready. I like got
oh, ready.
All of Paul Mosier's works, and Paul Mosier is like the expert
man,
on that issue. He hates apologetics in general, but when it comes to hiddenness, he's good.
You know who else is good? Michael Ray. Have you ever heard of him?
Yeah, I got his book on it.
Yeah, he's really good too.
Chad Meister, he's got some work on it as well.
But we have a special guest today that we had last week, so this is kind of like round two, so I'll let you take the helm, my friend.
All right, yeah, we got Nash, no last name, on for the second time because we had problems, and I'm blaming it all on Russell, but we had problems last week, so this is actually the second time we're having this debate, so sorry y'all didn't get to see the first time around, but we're doing it again, and hopefully it'll be good. So welcome on the show, Nash. So we had two questions for you. You know, tell us a little about who you are, and you know how it was that you became a pagan, and then we also want to hear the story behind the hair. So
awesome. Okay, so I became a pagan about 10 years ago. I grew up Christian, but at that point I was just kind of like questioning a lot of things, and I ended up doing a lot of research, and I just kind of connected to the Norse pantheon for whatever reason, and I've been following the Norse gods since then, and I've decided to kind of theme my channel around that and random video games. But it was basically just through a lot of research and then talking to other people that I met. And I've always been interested in mythology and everything like that. So just kind of went off of that. My hair, I get bored very easily. So and I did entertain the idea of becoming a hairstylist way back when. So I kind of experiment on myself when I'm bored. So I figured I'd channel a little spring festivity and just make my hair pink. That's it.
You know what? It's whatever floats your boat. So we are glad to have you on today. We're still debating, is Easter a pagan holiday? And so I think the format we got is pretty simple here. We just got 10 to 12 minute openers, and then we're going to do away with rebuttals this round and just have you both talk with each other, bring up whatever point you want to, push the other person where you want, and you know, I'll just switch it up if I feel like we're going way out in the left field on some particular issue, and if I have to get it back on topic. But other than that, I'll prove it and letting you talk. So Russell, if we don't have anything else, and if you don't want to play any more silly sounds, then we're gonna let there we go. That's it.
Well, last week was your fault, so I do want to say that because, you know, you're supposed to be the backup recording guy, and you totally failed.
Well,
so
you didn't tell me I was supposed to do it last week.
It's automatic. You know,
Is it?
Co-host responsibilities. Okay.
Really? Because I didn't get that memo. Was that in the fine print of my contract when I...
Yeah, it's in the tulip argument somewhere in there.
Oh, boy. Why I missed it. All right, so then without further ado, we will let Nash open this debate up with a 10 to 12 minute opening, although it doesn't have to be that long if you don't want it to be, but your 10 to 12 minute opening statement.
Okay, awesome. I actually came prepared this time. Okay, so today Easter is celebrated as one of the principal festivals in the Christian religion. However, its exact origins lie muddled in the secrets of the past. Is it Christian or is it pagan? The answer isn't as cut and dry as some might insist. The first recorded celebration of Christian Easter comes from the 2nd century, although the observance likely was ongoing earlier. In 325, the First Council of Nicaea attempted to create a uniform date for the celebration after many Christians grew dissatisfied with the organization of the Jewish calendar. The council was able to establish this, though no details of computation were specified, and the process of adoption took many centuries and numerous controversies. Today, Easter must fall on the first Sunday after the full moon, on or after the 21st of March. This year, the full moon occurs on the 28th, tomorrow, with Easter following on the next Sunday, April 4th. Easter is and was linked to Passover, an observance that commemorates the Exodus from Egypt and the passing over of Israelite houses during the 10th plague of death. Some scholars have hypothesized that this celebration itself was an amalgamation from the Canaanite agricultural spring festival of unleavened bread that was connected with a barley harvest. But it makes sense for the early Easter and Passover festivals to have been connected, as the earlier religion of Judaism is from which Christianity sprung. However, as opposed to many languages which still call Easter a derivative of Pesach, I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, English deviates from this. The reason for this deviation is highly debated, and the most cited origin of the word Easter comes from one main source, St. Bede the Venerable, who wrote in The Reckoning of Time in the 7th century. Easter Manov, I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, has a name which is now translated as Paschal Month, and which was once called after a goddess of theirs named Astore, or Eostra, depending on how you want to pronounce that, in whose honor feasts were celebrated in that month. Now they have designated that Paschal season by her name, calling the joys of the new rite by the time-honored name of the old observance. Bede's credibility has been challenged many times, and really his greatest supporter comes from the 19th century in the form of Jacob Grimm. Grimm wrote of Bede's observances, the great Christian festival, which usually falls in April or the end of March, bears the oldest Old High German remains of the name Ostara. This Ostara, like the Anglo-Saxon Eostra, must have been in a heathen religion, had denoted to a higher being whose worship was so firmly rooted that the Christian teachers tolerated the name and applied it to one of its own greatest anniversaries. Ostara, or Eostra, seems therefore to have been a divinity of a radiant dawn, or the upspringing of light, a spectacle that brings joy and blessing, whose meaning may have easily been adapted by the resurrection day of the Christian's God. However, between these two testaments, there was little other proof of the goddess's existence, or the fact that she influenced the origin of the holiday we know today. That is until the 1950s, when an archaeological discovery from near the former villages of Morken and Haraf in Germany came to light. Here, archaeologists found a number of inscriptions dating from 150 to 250 CE, which appear to be dedicated to a deity or group of deities known as the matron Ostria Henna, which could be etymologically connected to Eostra or Ostara, as Jacob Grimm surmised almost 100 years before its discovery. Now, because there is a lack of records in respect of the gods of the mainland Germany, it is difficult to say for sure what the meaning of the origin of Ostria Henna is. Some have surmised that it may have been a group of goddesses similar to the Norns of Scandinavia. Seeing as Germany has many of the same gods as the Scandinavians, it may very well be true. That said, in Norse lore, there is a dwarf Ostri, who along with Northri, Suthri, and Vestri represent the cardinal directions as they hold up the skull of Ymir, which becomes the sky. Because Ostri here is directly connected to a direction, it could be surmised that the Ostria Henna denotes to a goddess or a group of goddesses connected to the east from which the sun rises. Seeing as the lengthening of days is a key point of the equinox and its celebration, it could point towards a goddess connected to spring and the rising sun. And this leads me to the overall motifs of Easter and the Gregorian missions. The prehistoric tradition of celebrating equinoxes and solstices is well known. The spring equinox is important as it symbolizes the days and nights coming into balance, as well as the lengthening of days. This was particularly important to the northern Europeans, as winter was a time of darkness and death if one was unprepared. With spring came new life, rejuvenation, and opportunity. As Christianity became more widespread, the Easter period became associated with the resurrection of Jesus. This could also tie into the motif of light conquering darkness as represented by the daylight hours gradually growing longer past the equinox. Spring festivals also coincide with the resurrection story due to their themes of rebirth and new life after the cold lifelessness of winter. Just as spring heralded new life in the form of crops and greenery, so too did Jesus in the form of faith and his own resurrection from death. So it was an easy correlation to make. In the centuries following, as Christianity grew more widespread, feast days became attached to the dates of older pagan festivals. This had the benefit of making conversion and transition easier, as people would already be familiar with the allotted days. Due to the pagans using both the lunar and solar calendars, it isn't a coincidence that the spring festivals overlap with the Passover season, as both have an astrological basis. However, it has been demonstrated in the past that Christian missionaries utilized local pagan festivals and religious sites for their own conversion purposes. The Gregorian mission led by Augustine to the British Isle in 596 was notable for its directive of preserving heathen festivals and religious places for the purpose of imposing Christian ceremony and philosophy on them. This had the benefit of allowing the pagans to adapt at a gradual rate, mitigating resentment and increasing the chances of successful conversion. A more modern version of Christian beliefs merging with pagan tradition can also be seen in Santeria, a fusion of Catholic practices with African folk beliefs from the Yoruba tradition. It began in the 17th century and, relatively recently in the grand scheme of history, has been prevalent in Cuban society ever since. So, what conclusions can be drawn of all of this? I, for one, believe that the early iteration of Easter must have existed for Christians, whose traditions then merged with pagan traditions to create the bones of the holiday we know today, although it has been largely bastardized by commercialization. I draw this conclusion largely due to the past examples of Christianity adapting pagan iconography and celebration for conversion purposes. Similarly, we have the modern examples like Santeria to show a clear fusion of pagan and Christian influences. As for the naming of Easter, it is possible that Bede knew of local traditions that weren't written down or currently are preserved by currently preserved sources, although it is possible that he was drawing his own conclusions based on hearsay and patchy research. This discovery of the Austria Henna engravings makes this a bit more complicated. However, without additional sources, it's hard to say exactly what it was denoted to. So is Easter pagan? I'm going to say not exactly. Easter, as is celebrated today, is one of two things, a celebration of the resurrection of Jesus and the belief that a giant anthropomorphic rabbit breaks and enters your home to leave plastic goodies in a mass-produced basket filled with plastic grass that is terrible for the environment. These are inherently not pagan, as one is Christian and one is commercialized money grab that's geared towards selling toys and treats to that most children will be bored with in 2 hours. So today, most pagans choose to celebrate the equinox, as it is, and most even call the holiday Ostara, after the seldom recorded goddess. This is how modern pagans have adapted the holiday, and it is distinct from the Christian and secular celebrations. I think instead of arguing over who created what we should instead find the commonalities and beauty that exists in the spiritual aspects of both pagan and Christian festivities. For example, both emphasize the belief in light conquering darkness as a key point, and I think that we can all agree that it's something the world needs more of. So to conclude all of this, I will say that the exact origins of the name and celebrations may never be known, but one thing is clear. As cultures clashed and traditions were shared, new ways of being were created. The world as a whole is a melting pot, and while we may argue and poke fun at each other, there's always something beautiful we can learn from one another. And that, I believe, is something truly worth celebrating.
Thank you very much for that opening statement, Nash. All right, we're going to flip it over to you, Russell. You got 10 to 12 minutes to make your case.
Yeah, that was great, Nash. Looks like you learned something from last week. You had time. What you guys don't know is that we recorded this last week, and we had my mic was muted. And what's really funny about it all is that you're going to find me and her agreeing more than disagreeing, which is kind of different than what you see amongst anti-holiday Christians that tell you if you don't. Or if you do celebrate Easter, you're celebrating a pagan religion, and you're disappointing God, and you're going to go to hell for it, basically. So you're going to see a lot different dialogue than that. And with that, I'll start my opening statement. I want to thank Nash again for coming on. With the debacle I had last week, and my mic my software just didn't recognize my mic, I just wanted to say thanks for jumping into the lion's den again.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, at PRA, this is what we do. We get two opposites, people that maybe disagree, and we put them together to discuss the big issues. It's awesome when you can discuss various views and walk away in disagreement without being disagreeable. One thing Christians have lacked over the years is in regards to approach, though. The term Bible thumper does come to mind. 1 Peter 3:15, though, says, that was a verse that really did affect my life in a big way. And part of it says, to every man, give an answer to the hope that lies within you, but do so in gentleness and respect. Many Christians have lost the gentleness and respect part of it, which in turn has made our opponents do the same. And I apologize on the behalf of Christians for that. At PRA, we take seriously the gentleness and respect. And like I said, we'll walk away not only learning something tonight, but we'll also walk away in disagreement, maybe, but not being disagreeable with each other. So Easter is the subject of tonight's debate, and obviously there's been a lot of controversy over it. And it's many years in the making. What has Easter become, I ask? And has it been commercialized? Yes, it has. And it's definitely lost a lot of meaning to people, pagan and Christian alike. I think that my inoculator would agree. For whatever festival you celebrate it for the reason that it exists and not for the mass market of commercialization. But the reasons we celebrate is just a small issue of what I'm getting into tonight. With the holiday right around the corner, people are hard-boiling eggs, Some are buying plastic grass, like Nash noted. Some are preparing to travel and see family. And some are going to church for the first time in a year, virtually. But there are those amongst the Christian camp posting these anti-Easter memes and telling other Christians not to celebrate a pagan origin holiday. My issue tonight is more with them than the pagans themselves, even though pagans have been joining into the meme game recently, or more recently, should I say. But to truly understand this debate, I want to lay out a few things that I think will further the conversation, and these are things that I've seen and experienced. One, often when it comes to holidays and celebrations, people get real worked up of trying to figure out who copied who. They do this so much that they commit all sorts of association fallacies, or they believe whatever comes from one authority's mouth and miss all that the celebration has to offer. Secondly, they see parallels and correlations in customs, and instead of jumping into the history of it, they immediately think correlation implies causation. They don't think that maybe this culture eats and decorates eggs because they are common foods that are abundant during this time of year. No, everybody, they want a symbol. They want something to correlate. And to, for whatever reason, they tend to lean towards copying and so forth. But Edgar Hennecke tells us that the earliest date Christians celebrate Easter, the Easter feast, comes from a manuscript in about 150 AD. The letter is called the Letter to the of the Apostles. The manuscript exists only in the Coptic right now. But from this letter, it is theorized by historians that the celebration goes back even further. But the term East itself wasn't Easter. It was called Pasch. And that's coming from the word Pascha, meaning Passover. Nash got that. She covered that, so there's agreement there already. It was celebrated near the Passover on the first day of the week based off Luke 24:1. So when it comes to Easter, I give a simple argument. And if you want to prove me wrong, all you have to do is take out one of my premises. The argument goes like this. Number one, pagans nor anti-holiday Christians can show that any modern Easter customs derive from pagan customs. Nor, number two, can they or anyone, including other Christians, show that it is wrong to participate in any modern Easter tradition. Three, therefore, I don't think that celebrating Easter is wrong, nor has any pagan origins. Some memes try to claim that Easter is a derivative of the Babylonian festival Ishtar. Here lies the first association fallacy. The claim is that Ishtar is pronounced Istre, so its roots stem from there. But because words sound the same, doesn't make them copies. And when you consider the word Pasch or Pascha, they aren't similar at all, especially when you compare it to the etymology of the region. I wouldn't even associate Ostre with Ishtar, but let's focus on Easter and that etymology. Easter, which is a derivative of the whole old High Germanic word Eostre or Ostar, is defined as east, rising, or an expression of movement towards the rising sun. This term later finds itself on the old Germanic calendar as Ostronomoth, according to Charlemagne's secretary and the Venerable Bede in the 8th century book, The Reckoning of Time. However, Bede is the only one that links it to a spring goddess called Astar. Springwolf, in his Reflections of Springwolf, a pagan scholar, says, as a pagan holiday, Ostara is one of the more confusing and convoluted festivals in terms of its history. Why? Because according to Pure Religion, another pagan site, we don't have very much information about Ostara, Oster, or Austri, and no material evidence that suggests worship. Springwolf goes on to say that the Celts admit that the holiday isn't one of their own or one of their original observances, and speculates it could have been brought by the Romans. But what do we do with Bede? He is the only person that links a goddess to Ostaramanoth, which I think me and Matt, Nash both can claim that we are screwing up when we say it. But is Ostara a Christian invention? According to many scholars, one like Ronald Hutton, who argues in Stations of the Sun, that Bede just made up the goddess and imposes a goddess based on the Greek culture. Other historians point out many faults in Bede's account here. Not only does he frequently contradict himself, but also states that he is basing this off of his own interpretation. That is basically saying, I'm not doing my homework. I'm not going to fact check this. I'm just going to go with it. But this didn't stop Jacob Grimm. He held Bede in high regard and furthered the notion that Ostara was a Germanic goddess of the spring. But what is not touted by the holiday crowd is that Grimm's comment about there not being a solid link. Grimm was a linguistics guy and tried to prove that Ostara was linked etymologically to the spring goddess. But language reconstruction is hard to do, sometimes faulty, and oftentimes speculative. Many scholars have criticized Grimm on this. Ronald Hutton posits that sometimes you even see original Christian holidays turned into pagan holidays, like in the case of Mother Schmike. All this is to say that we have Bede as the only account, which has led modern historians like Hutton, Alexander Tilly, Carol Cusack, and Frank Stinto to question if there was ever a goddess Ostara at all. So simply, Ostara Manant has just as much chance of being the month of spring than a goddess. There just isn't any sufficient evidence either way. And it could be that the reason we call it Easter is most likely why we call Independence Day the 4th of July. We often associate holidays with the month. In 1859, George Zappert announced that he had found an old German lullaby. Now known as the High German Lullaby, this lullaby was purported to have come from the 9th or 10th century, but Joseph Virgil Grauman, in a 46-page essay, demonstrated that it was a complete falsification. Others like Cyril Edwards and Henrik Fichtano also claim it was a forgery. Later, it was claimed that Zappert had a reputation for this very thing, not to mention why were there Hebrew proverbs in it. Finally, we come to the Matrone, or Matron. In 1958, near Markenhof, Germany, 150 Roman-Germanic votive inscriptions were discovered. In them, the Matron Austria Hanna is written about. The problem is that we don't know what the Hina on the end signifies. However, we can most definitely see that they are etymologically linked. We can see that Ostre and Austria Hanna are related to the East, but it is impossible to tell if they have any relationship between that and a goddess. Shaw concludes that Austria Hanna and Ostre are not the same deities. He goes on to say Ostre may have been a matron of a local group, but it's not known with any certainty. But even if there was a goddess, this still doesn't prove that Christians stole the holiday or celebrated in any sort of association with a pagan tradition. We have extraordinarily little, and as I have noted, insufficient evidence to conclude there was a goddess, and even less that posit that there was some feast that correlated with the Easter holiday that we celebrate today. Even though I am sure there may have been a feast around the equinox, that says very little to the reasons Christians celebrate Pasch. I mean, we have seen other celebration like Odin's Day from the Norse or the festival of Beast from Egypt celebrated around this time. But to associate them with the Christian holiday is quite a stretch. Therefore, we have to be careful not to make association fallacies unless those associations are beyond the speculative and past the realm of conjecture. One person comes to mind here, Alexander Hyssop, author of The Two Babylons. Hyssop, apologist, recently had to recant the previous defense of his work, finding the several errors Hyssop made. Now we'll move on to premise two. Why can't anyone show me why it's wrong to celebrate our modern traditions? The answer is twofold. First, no Christian is celebrating Easter considering pagan deities. And it seems the early church had an issue with these things too. Paul tells the people of Colossia, therefore, do not let anyone judge you by what you eat or drink or with regard to religious festivals, a new moon celebration or Sabbath day, 1 Colossians 2:16. Many people have traditions and family traditions. Sometimes those traditions are repurposed and passed on. This brings me to the traditions themselves. Let's consider the Easter egg. There are Christian traditions associated with this as well. One of Mary Magdalene, in which, because it was spring, brought eggs for her and the women to eat as they were going to the tomb of Jesus. Once discovering it was empty, she dropped the eggs, and then when they touched the ground,
Red.
There is evidence that the Eastern Orthodox celebrate this tradition today, but evidence of its origin is scarce. The first time we have a reference to the infamous Easter egg comes from a book in the 12th century in which King Edward I had 450 eggs decorated with golden leaves given to his family on Easter. But this just tells me eggs are a common food. During Lent, dairy and meat are fasted, so people would gather an abundance of eggs. During early spring, hard-boil them and have them as a holiday treat. This also shows that nobody can lay claim to common things. Just because pagans use eggs to represent fertility doesn't mean Christians are. The Easter Bunny is another example that we can examine closely. Again, the paper trail is very slim. First, the Easter Bunny was never a rabbit.
It 30 was a seconds, hare. Russell.
All right. According to Weiser, the earliest reference to the hare comes from the 1572 book in which the author says, "Do not worry if the bunny escapes you. Should we miss his eggs, then we shall cook the nest." This culminates until German professor George Frank von Frankenau in 1772 spoke of the tradition in which a bunny stole eggs and hid them from children in the garden. Hares, like humans, they burrow themselves in a nest to survive the winter. So seeing them around that time and seeing that your crops have been dug up is just a way to tell that the spring is here and that the winter is over. So in conclusion, I stand by the notion that Easter isn't a pagan holiday, and I think the burden of proof is on Nash tonight. Like Springwolf, I think we can all celebrate the holiday for the sacredness that we both can glean from it. So as the pagans celebrate the equinox, I think it's awesome that Christians can celebrate the resurrection. Thank you.
Good stuff. Very, very detailed there, Russell. All right. So now we're just going to let the two of you, you know, talk about it. This is the good part of the debate. And so we're going to let Nash open this up. So, you know, any argument you want to discuss, any detail, any questions you have for Russell, all you.
Awesome. I really don't think there's much argument on my part. Like, a lot of it is speculative. One of my biggest complaints with history is the lack of records that we have from mainland Germany and the pagan religions that existed there. We just don't know a lot. And then, like I said before, you have the sagas and everything and the Eddas from Iceland that documented the Scandinavian beliefs, but even those vary depending on location, and we have different legends and stories from different places that don't match up to what Snorri wrote. So it's kind of like touch and go in some places, and a lot of it has to be speculative because we just don't have the records to fill in all of the gaps. And I think that's like you said about the pagans adopting Christian festivals sometimes, is because as pagans, we sometimes don't have access to a lot of the history. So I think a lot of pagans want that structure because many of them do come from a Christian background. So it's kind of like taking a familiarity from that and kind of imposing their newfound beliefs on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I see that too. One of the things that I did notice is that there isn't a lot of history, but as far as people being able to claim that Christianity stole the holiday, or there was some sort of intermingling going on of holidays, I would say we need primary sources, right? So I would say that we need a primary source to tell us more about Ostara and when the exact day she was celebrated. Because if you celebrate on like a Tuesday, the equinox, right? And I celebrate Easter on a Sunday, we're really not celebrating the same thing, right?
No.
Exactly. So it's a different holiday all around. So if this equinox celebration that the pagans did celebrate, which I'm sure they did, I mean, every culture did, you know, I mean, I named two, but I had a list of like 16 to 17, you know? So I think that, you know, we can glean from history that, okay, the Christians always celebrated this. It was nothing new. And yes, they went to convert people. You know, people kept some of their family traditions, you know, and I think that could be the case. And I'm not saying that that's not. I think there's a lot more actually on Christmas that I could argue about than there is on Easter, except that it's kind of like a taken for us because we've always celebrated it. So, I mean, the paper trail is thin and the primary sources just aren't available to us. So I can't dive into speculation and conclude that, yes, Easter is celebrated in any sort of pagan rite or pagan festival. They're around the same time, but many holidays fall around the same time. I mean, you know what I mean? I mean, so many of them do. And human beings, I mean, that's one thing we have in common. We have holidays in common. We all celebrate certain things, certain times of the year. This stuff gets so bad that I have other Christians tell me that you can't celebrate your birthday because you're, you know,
I've heard that before.
Glorifying yourself. And I'm like, what? So, yeah. So when I say that my biggest fight is with fundamentalists, I mean it. And it's not with the pagan themselves. And, you know, because I love the Norse pagan mythologies and so forth. I mean, like I said, Tolkien, C.S. Lewis, you know, they took right out of the Eddas to create the Chronicles of Narnia and Lord of the Rings and so forth. And it's just an amazing history that we don't have much to go off, and it is left to speculation. Yeah. But if there's anything that you saw on my end that you want to ask about, you're free.
I'm trying to think specifically. I don't think there's like a lot that I actually disagree on though, because it really is speculative. So like, I mean, I think the main thing for me is this, just that I don't get why people say that like you can't, like, even if there was concrete evidence that this originated or mingled with pagan tradition or whatever, it doesn't necessarily make it a pagan holiday if you're not using it for that. Because I mean, like, my grandmother goes to church every Saturday night and nobody is going to argue that she would be pagan at all. She would recoil completely at the being called that. But she uses Easter to celebrate family and to celebrate her faith. And that's, to me, that is beautiful, because she is such a strong believer in the Christian faith. And I would never try to be like, no, you're secretly celebrating a pagan holiday. But even if it did have pagan roots, that's not what you're using it for. So that's not the meaning it has for you. So for me, it comes down to meaning. And again, like you said, like, the dates aren't even, like, they're around the same time, but like the 4th is when Easter is, and most pagans would celebrate the equinox on the date of the equinox, or around the full moon tomorrow. So I mean, well, yeah, they could have been, you know, celebrated together in like small villages or something at one point in history. Like, I don't think that.
Yeah, the sun would revolve and, you know, the days would fall on the exact day, of course. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I agree. But yeah, so I noticed you did a little bit more on the Augustine's proclamation there.
Yeah,
I would love to hear the mission thing. Yeah, I would love to hear a little bit more about that on your side, and what sources that maybe you used. I know you sent me a bunch last time, but
oh yeah, let me find those. I have I have a bunch of tabs open.
Yeah, no, it's all good. It's all good.
I have so
you
many.
Have to send them right now. Just, you could just talk about them from what you've gleaned over the past week.
Okay, definitely. So from like I have the Oxford Dictionary National Biography thing about the Gregorian missions of 596 to 601. Launched by Pope Gregory. I'm trying to get to the point where it says about the... This is long. Oh, it's really long. Okay, search for this. Yes, I actually found it exactly when you did that.
Nice.
Okay, so contracts continue between the missionaries in Rome. Bede preserves the correspondences between Augustine and Pope Gregory, in which the latter answers the former's questions about such matters as marriage, church ritual, and sexual relationships, along with a letter in which Gregory advises Augustine not to destroy pagan shrines, but rather convert them to Christian uses. So that was one documented letter where the Pope actually was stating that you shouldn't destroy these things, as opposed to kind of like imposing your own instances.
And that's Bede, right? That's from Bede, right?
Well, he didn't write it. He was preserving their letters, the actual correspondences between them. So it wasn't.
But he was. But Bede was a sympathizer, so we can't take him seriously. No, but no, you know, I did see in The Reckoning of Time that his claims to Ostara, I think, were miscalculated, for the simple fact is he does kind of like justify it like that. And you'll see historians do stuff like that at times when they're not sure, you know. Yeah. And that's which, I mean, he's a lot closer to the events than we are, you know. So if he doesn't know, How long ago did it die out, do you think, before or how everything was kind of mixed up? I mean, I know the Romans were all up in that grill for a long time.
Yeah. So I mean, there's not a lot of records from like the even pagan like England, like the Druids that lived there. There's not a lot of records about them, especially like what they practiced. I mean, we're still learning things about how Stonehenge functioned, and they're still finding stuff about that site and everything. So for when it died out, I mean, it could have been really early, or it could have been like an underground thing. It could have been a specific secular cult that celebrated this particular goddess, or it could have been brought over from the mainland to England at some point, but you just don't know. And then, I mean, if there was ever any records, they were either lost, destroyed, or somebody didn't take very good care of them, or they just were preserved as an oral history that eventually just died out because people didn't keep it alive, or they just decided to leave it in the past because they had moved on to a different religion. So it's all over the place. And that's one of the things that kind of saddens me about paganism to an extent, is because there's just a lot of things you don't know, and you wish you could just go back in a time machine and be like, what do you know, so I can preserve this? But Yeah.
So I'm going to invite you to be a Christian tonight then. And I'm going to throw you the evangelist bone, because we do got a lot of preserved history. But no, seriously, that is one of the reasons that I think Christianity is so solid, is because, and I told you this last time, is that, we have a lot of evidence, and which makes me think, I mean, what was the attraction to Norse paganism on that vein? If there wasn't a lot of evidence, I mean, it's a curiosity of mine. And I've asked this of my friend that you told me you watched our interview with him. Mm-hmm. And he kind of had a different answer. And I'd just be interested to hear yours.
Yeah, for me, it was just I looked into a lot of different branches of paganism, and it was really just kind of like a resonation. Like it was like a feeling. Like because like before, I had actually been a pretty devout Christian before. When I grew up, I went to church, I went to Christian school, and it's just like a specific feeling you get. And that kind of feeling kind of died out in me. And then researching more about Norse paganism, it just kind of like reignited that spark where I wanted to believe in something. That's why I respect atheists for not being able to believe in something. But like for me personally, I just wanted to believe in something, and it just kind of resonated with me. For whatever reason, I don't know, but I still to this day just still feel that connection to that for whatever reason. But
yeah, no, I hear you. There's, you know, a lot of people do get into stuff because it resonates, and I can understand that and sympathize with it. I've always had an affection for Christ, so thankfully that's something that never died out. It just kind of drove me deeper in, and even when I had doubts about Christianity. I mean, I was at a point one time when my father had passed that my atheist cousin just really ripped into me and was like, hey, why do you have faith? And I walked away with that conversation with more doubts than I ever had possible, feeling a little, divinely silenced, you know, like he was away from me and stuff like that. But I told myself, you know, I need to know why I believe what I believe. So it kind of set me on a quest that actually reignited that fire for me. And that's how I came here today. You know, I started with C.S. Lewis, actually. So it was The Problem of Pain, which was such a big philosophical jump for me that my head hurt. And I had to read it like 3 or 4 times before I truly understood it and looked up definitions. But yeah, it was really cool. So, I mean, yeah, it kind of ignited a fire in me. And you know, that's kind of like where I went. But as far as the holiday goes, you're in agreement basically that, you know, Christians shouldn't have to worry about celebrating or pagans.
I think they're two separate celebrations. I mean, you should celebrate it for the reasons you want to celebrate it for, and they're two separate things. They can coincide if you want them to. Like, I have a Christian family, but I'm not, so we both celebrate together, but two different things. So we still celebrate around the same time. And I mean, if my family wants to take me to church, that's fine. I'm not going to be like, no, I can't go in there. No, I mean, I still find joy in spiritual things, because that's just how I was raised and who I am as a person. I enjoy all aspects of spirituality. So,
Cool, cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, I just had another good one to ask you with the holiday. But I forgot. David, you got anything for us?
Well, I mean, I was kind of had the same question that you asked about kind of why the Norse paganism, if, you know, not a lot of evidence on it. But I mean, I think she answered that question. I guess kind of one I would have, and I'm not sure how relevant it is to this discussion, is kind of what do you find then to be lacking about Christianity?
I don't know. Just for me, it was just a lack of like personal connection. Like we're not really personal connection. I just didn't, it was like a feeling. Like I just lost the feeling of attraction towards it. And like, I just couldn't reconcile in my head like that. And it was, it was 10 years ago and it was a weird time for me, but yeah, it was just, I had a lot of questions that I couldn't answer about things. And I mean, I even in Norse paganism, there's still questions that, like, I mean, I think I talked about in one of my videos before, like reconciling science with the lore that we have. Like I said before about the dwarf Ostri and the sky from Ymir's skull. Do I actually believe that the sky is made from Ymir's skull? No, I don't. I believe that there's science in space. So for me, it's like a balancing act between wanting to believe like in metaphorical, like spiritual stories, and then believing in the facts that you could see around you. And it's gives me a headache.
Yeah, I hear you. And it does. I had one question, and this has to do with the holiday memes that we see. What do you think? How do you feel about those memes when you see them posted by your own, you know, your own camp? You know, I know how I feel. I get enraged when I see Christians doing this to other Christians. But
yeah, I mean, once in a while, they can be like, if they can be funny depending on what they are. But after a while, it's like, okay, you're just kind of beating a dead horse with it, like. Ishtar was not pronounced Easter. There's zero evidence to say that that was ever a pronunciation for that. I've seen that one before. And it's just some of them, like, it's like that when you see something on Facebook and you just take it as fact without like Googling it. So it's like, no, don't do that. It gets irritating, especially when people don't fact check it and they just kind of like keep pushing it. So it becomes like the mainstream thought.
Oh yeah.
No.
Yeah, I think that's a problem. A big problem with even fundamentalist Christians. They do the same thing. And yeah. I have an issue with it. I don't like that stuff. I don't like bad information. Like C.S. Lewis did say that, you know, good philosophy exists if only to counter bad philosophy. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like what we try to do here on the show. I mean, we try to counter different views, and if those views are wrong, we flesh it out the best we can, you know, and you know, without being obviously disrespectful, and obviously try to be welcoming. With that, you know, it's kind of funny that we go on the subject of copying and borrowing, right? And that's one of the big things that really stuck out to me, is that everybody is trying to reach for some sort of correlation that, you know, implies causation, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a ton of that, and association fallacies, which, I mean, if we were to take, and this can apply for you guys as well, if one of the apologists that I said that I listen to regularly, he said, you know, we got to be careful with these type of things, because, you know, you could basically turn to me and say, hey, well, you know, Christianity is pagan within itself, because they called Jesus the Lion of Judah, and lions are a form of a war god in Egypt, you know. And it's like, dude, we can't use common things to kind of like describe certain things. And you know, we're humans. We're going to have similarities in some of the things we do. So I'll let you speak on that on your side, if you see things like that as well in your experience.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's you can't get away from it, especially. I mean, it's a given fact that there's a lot of similarities between cultures across the globe. They're going to be similar in some respects. I think it's just a given with humans that there's going to be some kind of baseline commonalities that everybody has. So the fact, like with the eggs, like, yes, they can be a fertility symbol, but in Norse lore, so are boars, and no one's going to be like, forcing those into Easter anytime soon. Like, here's the Easter boar. Now, no. So, I mean, like, just because eggs are a more common theme of fertility doesn't, I mean, eggs are everywhere. I personally love chickens. So, like, I mean, if I could have a backyard full of chickens, I would, but I'm not going to be like, look at my fertility symbols. No, this is my breakfast. Like, it's a common thing that you find everywhere. They're cheap at the dollar store. Just, like, it's, no, it doesn't have to have some underlying meaning. I think a lot of people try to, like, force meaning where maybe there doesn't need to be some deeper significant meaning. Like, maybe it just is a thing. It just is. Just let it be the way it is. Instead right. of, like, oh, well, it secretly means that. Does it, though? So, I mean,
I think, yeah, I think there's also just people have a desire to kind of know something that everyone else doesn't know. Yeah. And that's one reason that, unfortunately, things like cults and just like these sorts of little QAnon type things are never going to go away, because there are people who always want to have like that source of information, but they don't want to actually do the fact checking and do the research. And so I think that's kind of one reason that you get stuff on, you know, things like surrounding holidays. And of course, not just that, but I think it just, a lot of it is most desire to know something scandalous that everyone else isn't in on.
Yeah, and kind of be like included in a group, like a special group of people that are in on this thing. Like, I think that's a part of it.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think Aristotle said it well when he said that, like, most men are, all men are created with this innate ability to know things, you know, and this desire to know things, this pull that we have. And maybe that has something to do with it, I don't know, but some people just take it way to the extreme. And that's kind of like why I wanted to do this debate tonight, was to kind of just put it on the record and say, hey, you know what, I think if I get a pagan on here, they would agree with me in most respects. So I've seen some pagans that are vehemently, you know, no, this does it. And yes. And it's like, okay, buddy. Okay. And then, you know, but I've seen, you know, most of them and most pagans I've talked to, and I know quite a few, they would tend to agree with me on this type of stuff more than many Christians that I've run into.
Yeah.
So I get more agreement out of pagans than I do out of the Christians on the holidays. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But anything else, Paulman, on that? I know you've
no. with it, man. I mean, it's not my area of study by any means, but I mean, no, I mean, I find it interesting. I mean, I've enjoyed listening to you both dialogue and talk about it, and, you know, I've learned some things as well. So, yeah, thanks.
Yeah, so I'll tell you a story before we go.
That's a sign that you're getting old, by the way, that you want to tell a story.
Well, yeah, it is. And I'm a dad, so I'm allowed to. So, and once I'm a grandpa, I'll be really allowed to. But let's hope that doesn't happen for
you. You mean you're not already?
Get out of here, old man. Young man, should I say. No, my son was coming down here, my five-year-old, and he's just half naked and trying to tell me stuff, and yeah, it totally threw me through a loop. But the story goes like this. I had a pastor, I think I told this in the Christmas extravaganza, that I bought him a Christmas present because he was really influential in my life and I wanted to do something nice. That was a dog. That's cool.
Yep.
I've got a couple stuff. I got guns. Look. Oh! And applause. I bought him a Christmas present. It was a picture of Jesus sitting on the Mount of Olives looking over the city of Jerusalem. And it was just a nice little picture I picked up at one of those cheap stores in the mall at the time that had just a bunch of random knickknacks, right? So I just got it because I was like, hey, he might like this. And, you know, when I gave it to him, he was like, you know, I don't do Christmas type stuff. Right. He was almost rejected the gift. He reluctantly took it, but it was the whole thing that, you know, he points to a scripture that described pagan trees or Christmas trees as being pagan. And it was the famous Jeremiah verse, right? So I'm sitting there and I'm like, okay, this doesn't make sense. like at the time I bought it, right? Because I was kind of naive. I was really young, kind of naive. So I was like, oh yeah. So I'm reading it. And then like a couple years later, it just never sat right with me. Right. So I started looking at the holidays and stuff like that. And I found that I was shown that verse totally out of context. And I know, you know, a lot of people say, well, Christians, they say context, context, context. Well, it's important when you're reading something. So when, I mean, any, you know, literature student will tell you that, you know, it's context is important. I think any human that reads a book should tell you that. But like, when you look at the context in its general, it's talking about idols. It's not even talking about trees. And when you look at the Christmas tree itself, and it's a pine tree, an evergreen, pagans would never cut down an evergreen. It's cold. They use it in front of their house to shield themselves from the cold. So it just makes sense to me that they would keep that outside and not bring it inside. So of course there's like, you know, you can go back to the Christian traditions of the Adam and Eve play and see that, you know, this, you could see where these two ideas of the triangle, ornament triangle, wall decoration and the paradise tree kind of merge. So, and you could see where that comes about in history, but it was just crazy to me that, you know, this is the type of stuff we have to contend with. And if people would just really take a look at history, take a look at what they believe and why they believe it, we could avoid a lot of these problems.
Mm-hmm.
But no. I'm Definitely. Done. That was my story. My old man story.
See, now the real question was, in the picture you gave him, did Jesus have long hair?
He did, and he was white.
See, if you'd done that in my church, like my pastor would have straight up burned it, because any pictures of Jesus with long hair, he'd say, "That's a hippie. That's not my Jesus," and then he would burn it.
Ow! Yeah, so I mean all in all, yeah, I think we both deal with some extremists on either side. Yeah. I remember listening to one of your videos, Nash, and you actually flicked off the camera there. I was kind of like, young lady? But no, I was like, no. But you were getting on the skinhead pagans that people associate a lot with.
God. Yeah, no, those guys, no. Oh, no. No. And I've had people like that argue with me about stuff, and it's like, no, stop. That's no, don't. Don't make me get into those guys. No.
But
I hate those guys. Those guys have no place in paganism.
It's just fundamentalism, and you're going to encounter extremes on each side, unfortunately. Mm. And maybe that's our nature, but this goes a long way. And when people talk to me about certain things that, you know, history is repeatable, you know, and I'm sitting there thinking to myself, I'm like, yes, I do go to the extremes because humans take things to the extremes all the time, you know? So we see that throughout history, Adolf Hitler, Pol Pot, Mao, the Crusade.
David Russell.
You know, David Paulman. That's what he's getting. But I think we've kind of hit the nail on the head here, David. Are we doing?
You've been hitting something on the head over there.
All right. Well, yeah. You want to do a closing statement, Nash, and start us out as you close. And this is a time to plug your channel too. I want you to plug your channel and tell our audience where to find you.
And tell them about how long-winded and gabby David Russell is.
Oh my. My channel, Nash No Last Name. You can check it out. Nash No Last Name. It's inverted. It's over there. I do talks about paganism and Norse paganism in particular, and different things like that. I also do book recommendations sometimes, and then poetry readings, because apparently people like hearing me read poetry. Cool. And then I do gaming videos. If there's any gamers in the audience, I do RPG playthroughs that are probably terrible, but that's fine. You can still watch them as background noise.
Absolutely. I like some of the games you play, though. I mean, I like it was Dragon Age. I think I saw one on there.
Yeah.
You Dragon Age? Yeah. Okay.
That's one.
For Honor will still always be a better game than Dragon Age.
For Honor? No, I don't think so, man. I have a storyline with that. For Honor's fun, just like cutting up people, but
that's exactly why it's a better game. It's a hack and slash. I mean,
right. So Nash, if you want to give a closing statement real quick, besides just the plug on paganism and stuff like that, that's fine.
Okay, so ultimately, I think that at the end of the day, there's a lot of speculation about the topic of Easter, and I think that instead of Christians fighting Christians and pagans fighting pagans, well, it's okay to make fun of each other sometimes. I think that we have more common ground than we actually usually pay attention to, and I think that we can learn a lot from each other. And I think that that's what we should focus on going forward, is the commonalities and the beautiful things that connect our spiritualities as opposed to divide them. So that's my ending thoughts. Find common ground.
As you said, you know, there's a lot of speculation, and unfortunately that means there isn't a lot of evidence in the way of practices. And that's where I land with Christianity and Easter not being a pagan holiday. I think we discussed it in detail tonight. And again, you know, unfortunately, like you said, the nature of paganism today is it's a belief that you have to piece together your own practice. Mm-hmm. And for me, that presents a problem when it comes to, you know, being able to say, hey, you copied us from here and you copied us from there. And you know, you've integrated this. And it's like, well, how do we know? And really, I always tell everybody so go to the primary sources, folks. Go to the history. And with that, I'll close.
About time. All right. It has been a fun evening, everyone. I think what we have coming up is we got a debate on the resurrection of Jesus. And then we've also got, I'll be doing a debate with a presuppositionalist. So if you know anything about me, you know that I have a vehement hatred for presuppositionalism, not for presuppositionalists. It's a distinction there. And so, yeah, that should be exciting. Russell, we got any other announcements?
Nope, that's it. Just expect... you know, some things in April. I've got some stuff in the works. I might be reaching out to a certain party about a interview and have a guest host that really wanted to talk with this guy. So I haven't thrown that on you yet, but it's in the works.
All right.
But stay tuned, everybody. If you like the content, subscribe.
In fact, you should subscribe even if you don't.
Yeah, just give us a like, something.
Can you feel it?